Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Alex Crook. Alongside me, we have an FA Cup winner in Scott Minto and an FA Cup runner-up in Dean Ashton. Here's what's coming up on the programme.
It's almost like reserve team football for some of the players that me and Scott would have had. We'd have been playing at, you know, non-league grounds. They're playing Champions League football to get minutes into their legs.
I think Ollie was holding himself back, to be totally honest with you, what he was saying. He was choosing his words very carefully.
Gareth Southgate, I think, is a really interesting one to keep an eye on, because we know that he's close to Sir Dave Brailsford, who is really going to have a big say in what happens next. He's a regular at the Old Trafford training ground.
Phil Foden has to play, has to start for England, and he has to start in the middle. He's just been so good for City this season, and I can't wait to see what happens.
I would rather City win it, say, 3-4 years on the spin, but we go down to the last day, than Liverpool win it by 10 points 1 year, City win it by 10 points the other year. For me, it's the season as a whole and how good that season has been and how good the finale is.
I didn't write that intro about you only finishing second in an FA Cup final, Dean Ashton, because you won me money that day. I backed you to score the first goal. The first goal was an own goal. Happy day, so I would never write that. How are we?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Yeah, good.
Scott, you good?
Well, I tell you what, I'm surprised Dino's left it at that. He's very polite, isn't he? I mean, you know, there's you, swanning it in Portugal, turning up late for the pod, giving a line like that, and he's just let it go. He must like you a lot, Dino.
I turned up late, yet Dean was later than me. How does that work out? Let's reflect on the Champions League in midweek. Very much according to the script, Bayern turned it around against Lazio, thanks to Harry Kane. City strolled through. The big guns are all there or thereabouts, aren't they? It's going to be a fantastic quarterfinal draw.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, gone to script. Not going to say it's particularly grabbed me, which sometimes it can be like that at this stage of the Champions League. And I think because of the draw as well, I think what we will hopefully get is some incredible quarterfinals, semi-finals with the teams that are already through and that you would expect to get through. But it's strange how you can look at a Champions League game and think it's an opportunity for a manager just to rest players or get minutes into players' legs. You know, for our era, it's almost like reserve team football for some of the players that me and Scott would have had. We'd have been playing at, you know, non-league grounds. They're playing Champions League football to get minutes into their legs. But it's the way the draw has gone. And yeah, it's got the you know, my appetite for the quarterfinals would be huge.
Yeah, we'll come on to it later, but it was a surprisingly strong Man City lineup. I thought I watched the Real Madrid game over here in Portugal, and as someone who's tipped up Real to win the trophy, I was a little bit nervous because they were rubbish, to be brutally honest, Scott.
Yeah, but they sometimes find a way to be rubbish and yet always get through to the next round. You know, they can be good and get through, and they can be rubbish and get through. It's their trophy, isn't it? So, you know, they believe it, they own it. I mean, two things for me. One, it's interesting that City, yeah, absolutely, I think they're dominant. You talk about you've tipped Real Madrid. I still can't see beyond Manchester City at the moment. But actually, the second one, I'm really pleased for Harry Kane. One, that he scored goals, and two, that he's got his team through to the next round, because I think he's a fantastic professional. I think he's a fantastic ambassador. He's absolutely ripping it up over there in the Bundesliga. And yet there are certain people, cheeky people, you know, seemingly happy that he looks like he's not going to get a Bundesliga title. So I'm really pleased for him.
Yeah, on the subject of teams who won't win trophies this season, let's get stuck into the weekend Premier League action, and we'll kick off at Old Trafford.
For Manchester United, the prospect of Champions League football seems further away than arguably ever before.
11 games they've lost this season now, Manchester United. Their record in the Premier League is 12.
Every game is a battle. Every game is a fight, and you have to be ready for that fight.
Where's the fight?
I think there's a consensus around the club at the moment that change might be coming.
What if he wins the FA Cup? What if he gets them into Europe?
It's now 10 games without a win in the top fight for them. That's their longest winless run for 30 years. Full time at Goodison. Everton 1, West Ham 3.
You've got to stand up and be counted as a team sometimes. It's just turning them draws into wins.
So there's certainly no gimmies at Old Trafford than there isn't across football.
Comes back to Garnacho. Fortuitous leading shoot. McNeil crosses. Harrison puts it in. Everton lead.
Manchester United against Everton is our 12:30 offering on TalkSport this weekend. I was at the Manchester Derby last Sunday. It was horrendous, to be quite honest. Manchester City light years ahead of Manchester United. Dean, how do United go about bouncing back against an Everton side who still need to put points on the board?
Well, they'll continue to feed off Ten Hag's positivity. You know, every interview he makes, it's about the future, it's about a process, it's about positivity. He can see the positives in every performance. The issue is everybody else sees something totally different. So I think they can get results. I think they'll probably beat Everton. I think Højlund's a massive miss. I think he just started to get that confidence and given them a different energy at the top end of the pitch that I don't think they've had for quite a few years. And that front three looked reasonably exciting. But you can't get past the fact that when you watch them, even when they win games, you think this is a very, very poor team that's poorly structured and, to me, poorly coached. There's no way that they understand what they need to do, and I think, look, it'll be a tough game, but I expect them to win because they've got players that still know how to win games even when they're not playing very well.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gave quite a revealing interview to Gary Neville and his cohort on the overlap this week. I listened to it over here in Portugal, and for me the standout line was about the fact that certain players, he didn't name them, but refused to be captain during his tenure. Obviously, a lot of those players will still be there. What does that tell us about this current crop of Manchester United stars?
I think that is the standout line because there was a lot, wasn't it? I think people want to make the most of the line about Ronaldo, obviously with Jude Bellingham and having Cantona and Brian Robson there. But I think without a doubt, you talk about the current players and where they are and why they are where they are right now. I think it says absolutely everything. You know, people criticised Harry Maguire. I haven't. And yes, of course, he's not the most natural athlete, but I do think he's got character. He may not be a true leader in the terms of the Brian Robson, the Roy Keane, the Steve Bruce, but he is one of the very few at that club that do have the character to play for Manchester United. I think it says everything. You know, we talked about Marcus Rashford last week, and while obviously he's not blameless and he's got to look at himself in the mirror, he's grown up in a horrendous culture and atmosphere. And, I think Ollie was holding himself back, to be totally honest with you, what he was saying. He was choosing his words very carefully. So, even him sort of saying, they didn't even come up to me. They got the coaches to come up to me and tell me. That in itself tells a story.
I think Scott's right. I think it is more about the culture necessarily than what Ollie said. But me personally, I would not have wanted to have been a captain. So that would have been a difficult decision for me as a player if the manager had asked me to be captain, because I wouldn't have wanted that responsibility. I was quite selfish and focused on being a forward, for example. So I can see how some players wouldn't want that responsibility. But I think because of the culture that's being built there, I really don't feel like it's something that a player would want at Manchester United. I think at other clubs it may be different, but just from a personal perspective, I never wanted to be a captain.
It's an odd one, isn't it? Because I was thinking about it, and obviously the role of a captain in cricket is hugely important. Tactically, very important if you win the toss and how you set your field up if you're bowling. But what is the role of a captain in football, apart from sorting out tickets for your teammates and just trying to galvanise the team? What does a captain actually do in football?
I've got to be honest with you, Dino. That surprises me about you, because I did see you as a, maybe not a captain, but a leader. You know, one of the few players in a side that when the chips are down, this guy is going to stand up and drag my team forward. And I think, although I know what you're saying about the tickets, Crookie, but I think it's a symbol of the side. It's a symbol of the club, of that particular moment. And I personally think any player should want to represent his club in that way as a captain. Yes, it's a bad moment for Manchester United, but just when the flak is flying on everybody, you're the one who's willing to hold your hand, put your hand up and say, do you know what? Give it to me. I'll take on that extra bit of responsibility. So, you know, one, Dino, that surprises me, you saying that. But two, I think it's a little bit more than, yes, he's not the England captain of cricket, but I think he represents everything what that club should be representing right now, and or at least trying to.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was just a personal thing for me because of the responsibility I think you have to stand up maybe before the game, to do certain things away from just the pitch itself. You know, nights out were always important, by the way.
Absolutely.
But I just
fine think at that.
I think, certainly in our era anyway, maybe not as much now, but I thought a captain's role as well was to question the manager, to, you know, when he said about tactics, etc., or on the pitch, be able to change that as a captain. I think that has definitely gone from the role. I can imagine a John Terry, you know, taking it upon himself to question the manager, or to you know, if he sees something in a game, change things and have a go at people in the right way. Whereas I think that is very different now.
On the subject of questioning the manager, there's been a lot of stories this week about what Manchester United could do moving forward. Lots of names linked with the head coach position should Erik ten Hag depart, as I think is likely now at the end of the season. Roberto De Zerbi has been mentioned. There are some people who think maybe he's a little bit too volatile on the sidelines. Gareth Southgate, I think, is a really interesting one to keep an eye on, because we know that he's close to Sir Dave Brailsford, who is really going to have a big say in what happens next. He's a regular at the Old Trafford training ground. Is that inspiring, that list? Thomas Frank was mentioned as well. What do you think, Scott?
No, I don't think it's utterly inspiring. You know, I actually thought, and it was a couple of months ago before Bayern Munich sort of said that Thomas Tuchel won't be there beyond. You know, I sort of thought, do you know what? He's got that kind of statesman-like figure that a United need. But again, he's very divisive. You know, we only need to see what's happened with Bayern Munich as well. And in a culture or in an atmosphere where the players don't seem to be able to handle it right now, what do you do? Do you get in a Gareth Southgate who will be that diplomat, who will, you know, work and from within and try and put his arm around players? Or do you want maybe a Thomas Tuchel, or, you know, maybe a De Zerbi type, who are a little bit volatile, but actually the players need to understand that he's the gaffer and they need to do whatever he says. It's an interesting one. And if he is close to Sir Dave Brailsford, I honestly can see that happening. I mean, I don't know about you, Dino. I genuinely think this is the summer where we're going to win a major tournament. And if he wants to sound out and sign off and say, right, that's it, then his stock will never be higher. So I think Gareth's one is a fascinating one. I really do.
I think unless he wins the Euros, and I'm not as confident as you, I've actually tipped up Portugal, funny enough.
There's a shot.
Bearing in mind when I'm doing this podcast. But unless he wins the Euros, I'm not sure that many Manchester United fans are going to be particularly excited, Dino, about Gareth Southgate taking over. You look at his record as a club manager, you look at what he's done at England, and yes, he's been successful to a point. Should have won the Euros last time around, should have beaten France in the last World Cup, certainly should have beaten Croatia in that semi-final. Does he really have the personality to be Manchester United manager, Gareth Southgate?
I mean, I think the England job is gigantic, so, and I think he's been able to handle himself incredibly well in that situation. But there's no doubt he'd be going into that Manchester United job probably already with half of the fan base not wanting him to be there, because they'll have been frustrated with what they've seen with England, and maybe the lack of certain players in the team and in the squad, you know, under his management. But I think Scott's right. I think it seems to all fit pretty well. There's a lot of links there, and it is going to be fascinating to see what happens, especially with Ten Hag. There's no doubt that it's, you know, one of the three or four biggest jobs in world football in terms of pressure. You have to be a certain character to be able to handle that, and there literally isn't many out there, I don't think.
Crookie, who would you want as from your, you know, United fans' point of view?
It's a really difficult question because I think if you gave me a shortlist of Ten Hag, Potter, I think is also a live contender, and Southgate, I'd probably stick with Ten Hag out of those three, to be honest. I love Roberto De Zerbi. I can see where people are coming from, saying that maybe his touchline antics aren't necessarily becoming of a Manchester United manager. But I do think he's got the personality and the charisma to handle this job. This is a dressing room that swallows people up. You know, I think watching that interview of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I felt sorry for him, really, because he clearly was desperate to be a success. He clearly loves the football club. He finished second and third, and maybe I didn't give him enough credit for that. But this dressing room isn't going to change overnight. They're not suddenly going to be able to ship out all the bad eggs. Anthony Martial will leave. Casemiro is not a bad egg. His legs have gone, but he'll go as well. Varane will go. Sancho's probably going to come back because he's on a bit of a stinker in Dortmund. So by and large, whoever is the manager at the start of next season, it could well be Ten Hag, is going to be faced with the same issues that numerous Manchester United managers have had to face. So it's not a short-term solution. I'd still stick with Ten Hag. Is that too ridiculous?
Not for me. You know, I listen, unless there's a standout candidate out there, which I think we're sort of saying, I'm not sure there is. I do like De Zerbi, and I do think that, you know, forget about what a Manchester United manager should look like. It's about just getting United back up there again. That's the important thing. And that's what they tried to do with Jose Mourinho, and it didn't really happen. But I think De Zerbi's a very good one. But unless you've got someone who's standout, I think Ten Hag is trying to lay down the law. He just needs the help from above. And if you have to pay off players to go or sell players on the absolute dirt cheap to get rid of that bad culture and bring in a good one, then so be it. So he's on trial. He's on trial to the end of the season. Let's see how he does from here on in.
Well, how do you think he'll do in this game against Everton, Dean? Because Everton have been playing well recently without getting results. The 3-1 defeat at home to West Ham didn't really paint the picture of the whole game, but it is 10 matches without victory now. Do you give them any chance?
I'd give them a very slim chance, but I'd give them more chance of a draw, a low-scoring draw. They can't score goals, Crookie. They've lost that touch that I thought they'd really gained at the start of the season with Doucouré in behind, whether it was Calvert-Lewin or Beto, and they've lost that. They were scoring goals in that run of not winning. They've only scored once in a game. You know, they just, in the Premier League, you can't score one goal and expect to win many games. You know, the opposition have got too much quality. So unless that changes, and pretty quickly, they're just going to be fighting in every game. And that wasn't what I thought of Everton a little bit earlier in the season. And they've gone back into that way of just being a dice side that can be hard to beat and break down, but then aren't really going to cause you many problems. So I don't see why Manchester United won't at the very least get a draw, but win the game.
Manchester United won't at the very least get a draw against an Everton side who could well find themselves in the bottom three. You are filling me with confidence.
Yeah, they'll look like Real Madrid though, won't they, Everton?
Doesn't that sum up everything about United at the moment? And I tell you what, if Everton play as well as they did last week against West Ham, then United would be under pressure and the fans would be on top of them. They might not be able to stick the ball in the back of the net, but if they are dominant at Old Trafford, Everton, poof, it's going to be tough. You're going to need some characters and leaders there.
I'm about to jump in that pool behind me and maybe not come up for a few weeks after listening to you two. From two teams who don't score goals to one who definitely do, Arsenal have the chance to go top of the table. They're at home to Brentford on Saturday. Yeah, what a performance it was from Arsenal on Monday night. Unfortunately, I'm married into a family of Arsenal fans and they are all strutting around like peacocks at this moment in time. In fact, one of them, my brother-in-law, suggested to me that this is the best football that Arsenal have played since the Invincibles season. Does he have a point, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. And I found myself working for TalkSport a few times, and almost having to say, look, I'm not an Arsenal fan here, but no, this is just brilliant football. I love watching them play. We saw it for 29 games last season and then they fell away. You know, you do feel they would have learned from that. Plus, they've got Declan Rice. But look, 6 past West Ham, 6 against Sheffield United. Does it quite count? I'm not sure. 5 against Burnley, 4 against Newcastle and 3 against Liverpool. You know, they are not just winning games and bouncing back after that very mini slump. They are absolutely battering teams. You know, so they're making a massive statement. And to them as well, in their own head, psychologically, they know they're coming up to that stage where everyone knows what happened last season. So to be going into not just in a winning stage, but winning really well and playing really well, they can't be in a better place. It might be, though, at some games, you almost feel, can we nick a couple of goals from that game a couple of weeks ago? Because we need one here. You know, it's all very well fives and sixes against teams who are not very good. Now the big ones are coming up, and I do think, look, they'll win this one pretty clearly, but the game against City at the end of the month is obviously massive for them.
Yeah, it's a huge period coming up for Arsenal because they've got Porto at home in the Champions League in midweek. They obviously lost the first leg of that game, so they can't afford to take Porto lightly, but it's going to be a full-strength Arsenal team against Brentford, barring the goalkeeper, because, of course, David Raya can't play in this game. He is He is unavailable to face his parent club. How much pressure will be on Aaron Ramsdale to put in a good performance, Dean?
Yeah, I think there will be, because obviously he's sat on the sidelines for weeks, and David Raya, I think, performance levels have got consistently better, and people have kind of stopped talking about Aaron Ramsdale. So I think more a case of not for his future as such, but just to remind everybody that he's a top goalkeeper himself, which he is. But I don't think he'll have that much to do, because I think Arsenal will be so dominant. Look, I love a trip to Dubai. Everyone does. But whatever happened when Arsenal got to go away, I think being able to just take a breath, the players maybe have that rest, but more importantly, the coaching staff maybe be able to have the time to look and work on things and find a way to free up Martinelli and Saka, because before that, teams were just doubling up, stopping that supply line. All of a sudden, with him playing, whether it's Odegaard and Havertz or Havertz and Trossard in that position, in those two forward positions, it's just opened up teams incredibly since they were back. And I really don't see how Brentford will be able to stop them.
You mentioned Kai Havertz there. He's gone a little bit under the radar because he got a lot of stick early in the season when he first made that move from Chelsea. But quietly, Scott, has he become quite a key cog for Arsenal?
Yeah, I wouldn't call him key, but what I'm sort of saying is just in the last few games, maybe he's justifying his tag. I still think they didn't need to buy him, and I'll stick by that. But he's stepping up, isn't he? You know, and you talk about, you know, Dino talks about, and he's right, Martinelli and Saka. Well, if other players step up, then it takes the pressure off those players. And Kai Havertz, you have to say, is stepping up. He's scoring in good moments in games. He's getting that confidence. And he's getting more involved in matches as well. One thing I'd say about him is, up until recently, if he's not scoring, what is he doing? Because he doesn't really help control the game. But when you've got Odegaard and Saka and Martinelli and Jorginho and obviously Rice as well, you don't necessarily need to do that. He needs to step up. But again, I agree with Dina. I don't think there'll be any problems here. And there could be another 3, 4, you know, who knows, even 5 in this one.
Let's talk about Ivan Toney. Producer Jeremy, who writes a few bullet points every week, he's describing the script, Ivan Toney, as, quotes, the most overrated player in the league by a mile. A little bit harsh?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think he's improved so much. Since he's got into the Premier League, he's been able to step up to the level. And I think it's incredibly hard to play in a team that isn't always dominant in the Premier League. I've done that myself. It's really difficult. And I think actually in the live games I've watched him, I watched him away at Wolves, where I don't think he was actually fully fit. I think he was ill as well, from what we heard afterwards. But he was terrific. His hold-up play, the quality of a pass once he got hold of it, the threat that he causes. I think the problem he's got is Brentford have maximised the players that they've had around him, and I think they're starting to dip away in terms of that, the levels that they've been able to reach. Obviously, a few key injuries as well, but I've been amazed at how poor Brentford have looked, especially without a Tony in the side or Mbeumo. They have looked very, very average.
I tell you what, Scott, Thomas Frank must have a brilliant PR agent, because he's been linked with Manchester United at a time when Brentford are in no form at all. And I think they'll be quite grateful come the end of the season that Burnley, Luton and Sheffield United are part of the picture, because they, in normal circumstances, in any other season, they'd be in dire trouble, wouldn't they?
Well, they would, but let's not forget the job that he's done. Let's look at the sort of the whole job of getting them in there and almost becoming an established Premier League side. And they have had a lot of injuries. And I think with Ivan Toney, look, it's very difficult. Dino knows, doesn't matter if you played striker role or any place. When you've been out with sort of a long time, whatever the reason, it's very difficult to hit the ground running. And to be fair to him, his numbers are very, very good. So I think they've had a big problem with injuries. I think it'd be a massive, too big a jump for Thomas Frank to be going into Manchester United. But I also don't think he should be under pressure in any way. I know he had a bit of a pop at some of the fans recently and saying, well, look, you know, what do you expect? Well, you're right. It's not a great season, but they haven't had Ivan Toney for half of it. And they've had a lot of players, Rico Henry being one of them, being injured as well. And, you know, you get four or five players out for Brentford, that affects the team, simple as that.
Just finally on this one, we've spoken a lot about Arsenal's prowess in front of goal. But for me, what sets them apart in the title race compared to City and Liverpool is their defensive resilience. I think they've got the best centre-back pairing in the division. They keep more clean sheets than their main rivals in terms of the Championship. You sort of know that Liverpool and Man City will concede. City even conceded against Copenhagen in the Champions League. Could that make a massive difference, Dean, at the end of the season if Gabriel and Saliba stay fit?
Yeah, of course. I think if they were to pick up an injury to either of those two, it'd be interesting to see whether they would fully cope. But Arteta's not daft. I mean, he's copied his old mate Pep once again with four centre-backs essentially playing, you know, and having that protection, I guess, when you do lose the ball, because that was their weakness last season. It was when they lost it, you know, they looked vulnerable on the counter-attack. And another reason of that is Declan Rice. Declan Rice is just a ridiculously good player with some of the best athletic features I think we've seen in the Premier League in terms of covering the ground and reading the play, both getting back and forward. I think they probably benefited from having him in front of them. But I think Saliba gets the headlines because he looks so smooth. But Gabriel, to me as well, I wouldn't have liked to have played against him. Super aggressive in the nature and the way he defends. Probably horrible to play against.
Jakub Kivior as well, I think, is playing quite well at left-back. Again, one of those four central defenders. Arsenal against Brentford is a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. We'll keep you updated during the game. Don't phone in. Our 3 o'clock commentary, live and exclusive on TalkSport 2, is Wolves against Fulham. Two teams who maybe at the start of the season would have expected to be in the relegation dogfight. They're not. I mean, we're talking about what happens to Gareth Southgate after the Euros. I think you have to put Gary O'Neill in the conversation to be the next England manager. I think he's potentially, Scott, been manager of the year.
I'll tell you what, that's a big shout, Crikey. England manager. And do you know what? He has done incredibly well. And I was watching an interview he did and saying that he actually hadn't been in charge of a team, even under 23s, academy, whatever, you know, until he became the Bournemouth manager. And, you know, it's sink or swim. And boy, is he swimming. He's doing so well. You know, we spoke about it, haven't we? At the start of the season, Lopetegui said, this squad's not good enough, I'm off. And then he comes in, the fans. Again, we talk about half a set of fans not wanting this particular appointment. Well, he has, and he didn't have pre-season either. So he only had a couple of days before that United game, and they were brilliant, really, from there on in. Results didn't happen straight away, and yet he's turned it around. So I think he has done a sensational job. This is a difficult one to call for me. I don't know in terms of the... Obviously, last week they missed Twang and Cunha, and then Neto and Sarr got taken off at half-time. I don't know the fitness there. If they're fit, I expect them to win, because Fulham have done very well this season, but mainly at home. not away from home. They've won 8 at home and only 2 away. So I think if Wolves have got their fit players out, I expect them to go in and win. If they haven't, it's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, I think it will be entertaining. And obviously Fulham looking to back up that win at Old Trafford on their last away trip. My credentials, by the way, for England manager, they're quite simple. If your number is in Alex Crook's phone book, you've got a chance. Gary O'Neill, Eddie Howe, Graham Potter, any of the above have got an opportunity. Let's move on to Sunday and arguably the biggest game of the season at Anfield.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Welcome to the Heartbreak Hotel. Check your problems in, drop your feelings off, and enjoy your stay.
What an epic battle we have unfolding for the right to be called the Premier League champions.
They find Salah instead, it's 1-0 on the counter-attack.
But Liverpool are determined to finish the season in style.
It's Darwin Nunez who has scored in the 9th minute of stoppage time.
Haaland on the money scores!
And the treble is still on, the double treble.
The biggest game in England now is Liverpool versus City.
They rarely win Anfield.
Nope. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 0.
But now comes the biggest test.
What we learned over the years is that if you want to be around City, you better win all your football games because they do.
Because they're the best two teams I have ever seen in my career.
This is where the heavyweights emerge. They might be behind on the scorecard, but Manchester City can still become the undisputed champion. And how the boys from the Kop would love to floor Pep for Klopp.
Liverpool against Manchester City is a really tantalising prospect. I think it's going to go a long way to deciding the destiny of the Premier League title. City's record away from home against Liverpool in recent seasons isn't great. Who are the favourites, Dean?
Well, I mean, when you look at that record that Manchester City have got at Anfield, you would have to say Liverpool. But I just think in these huge games, I think it's massive that Liverpool have maybe not got 2 or 3 of their absolute stars. You know, they might be fit, but are they ready for a game of this magnitude and the intensity that it's going to require? And I just think that could be the difference. I think this could be a year that City do win at Anfield because they've got their players back fit, their key players back fit, and they're in superb form. And I think that's crucial coming into a game like this. And it might just have come a couple of weeks too early for Liverpool, but it feels like these games between the top sides is gonna decide the title. You just can't see them dropping many other points. So this game is just gigantic.
Looks like Mo Salah probably will be fit to return, but how sharp he is, I think, is open to debate. Darwin Nunez should also feature. Dominic Szoboszlai as well. Looks like he'll be ready for the weekend. Dean's touched on it there. Is this the title decider, Dean, or is that unfair on Arsenal?
I think it's unfair on Arsenal. I think it's hard to call still, but what do you think, Scott? I mean, I still think these games are going to decide the title because I don't think they'll drop many other points.
City's running, Scott, is you get this month out of the way. They've got two huge games against Liverpool and then Arsenal at home. Yeah. You look at the rest of the season, it's like taking candy from a baby, really.
Well, you know, you may say that. I couldn't possibly comment. But what I do agree that the next two games are crucial. I do think it's unfair on Arsenal. I think they've shown they are in the title race. I still expect them, if you really pin me down and say, what do you think of a 1-2-3? I'll stick with what I said at the start of the season with City and I think Liverpool second, Arsenal third. But trust me, Arsenal are very much in this title race. I think the next two games, as you just called it there, Crookie, I think they could nail it. I really do. If City win both of them, you know, their next two games are Liverpool away and Arsenal at home. If they win those two games, I think it's not just the fact that they've beaten the top two or the two around them. I think psychologically the message they've sent, and they've been here before. You know, they've swallowed up Arsenal in the way they did last season. They're able to handle Champions League and FA Cup and go for a triple again. So I think these next two games are absolutely crucial. And I totally agree with Dino. I think it depends on Liverpool's team selection and the fitness of their big players, because it's one thing for the youngsters to come in and do really well against the Chelsea side that is just in disarray at the moment, and a Southampton side that, yes, played very well and could have gone 2-0 up at Anfield, by the way, before Liverpool got the first goal. But they're a Championship side. It's another thing to play Manchester City.
What's a good result for Arsenal, Scott, this weekend?
I think it has to be a draw. And I just think anything other than a City win. Look, I don't think they'll want Liverpool to win, obviously. But I think if City do win, and again, psychologically say, you know, we're now in the business end and this is where the big boys step up. If they go to Anfield and get that win, I think, as I say, psychologically, that's massive. So I think a draw, but anything other than a City win.
I think it tells you all about the type of season that Phil Foden is having, that although Pep Guardiola didn't play the reserves against Copenhagen in the week, he decided to rest the England international. He's going to be fully fresh for this game. He scored 17 goals in all competitions this season, his best ever numbers. He's going to be player of the year, isn't he, Dean?
I would expect so. He's been absolutely, you know, incredible. Everything that we've expected him to be, just on a more consistent basis. And it's amazing, isn't it? Once you reach a level that clearly Pep Guardiola is really happy with and wants of you as a player, all of a sudden every interview now Pep's praising him. You know, he's telling everybody just how incredible he's been, what a player he is. Before that, he would sort of temper what he said about him, try to play it down. There's no doing that anymore. He's too good, and it is going to be unbelievably fascinating to see what Gareth Southgate does in the summer, because Phil Foden has to play, has to start for England, and he has to start in the middle. He's just been so good for City this season, and I can't wait to see what happens.
It's not that difficult a decision, is it, Scott, to be honest? Because Harry Kane's going to lead the line up front. You find a way to play Saka and Foden, and then it's a question of who else plays it in that front four.
Well, do you know what? It's a really interesting one, and we can, and I'm sure we will, as we build up to the Euros, talk about it. I'm 100% agreement with Dino. He has to play, and two, I want to see him in the middle. But I don't think he trusts him in the middle. I don't think Gareth will play him in a 4-3-3 or even a 4-2-3-1 in the middle, but because Bellingham is that kind of number 10 and doing that in Real Madrid. So I think we'll see him out wide. Look, I just want to see him in the side.
Bellingham can play in the two, though, can't he? If he wants to play two holding midfielders, Bellingham has the engine and the football intelligence to sit in there alongside Declan Rice and bomb on.
He absolutely can, but then the pressure will be on. Well, where's he played for Real Madrid? And he's absolutely bossing it for the biggest club in the world. You know, and he's gone in and done that. I totally agree with you. You know, I think a 4-3-3 with Bellingham and Foden and Rice there would be amazing. Just got to find someone on the left who is in great form. But there's lots of very good attacking players. But look, whether he plays in the middle, whether he plays out right, he finds a way, doesn't he, still to come from out wide to get in the middle. And I thought he was sensational against Manchester United.
I agree with Scott. He has to play Rice as a holder, Bellingham, Foden. I mean, the opposition would be frightened of that attack. And then personally, I'd play Anthony Gordon on the left, because I think he gives you a mindset and an energy and a defensive intelligence to do that role and get back and help the team. But you've got to play those two ahead of Rice. That midfield, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's going to be really interesting to see what the makeup of the squad is for this upcoming international break. Anthony Gordon, I think, is a brilliant shout because Jack Grealish is injured and isn't having a great season anyway. Marcus Rashford doesn't justify selection, in my opinion. So I think the left-hand side, if you are going to play Foden in the middle, is a little bit of a conundrum for Gareth Southgate. One player who will be in the squad, I'm sure, is Trent Alexander-Arnold come the summer, and he's been stoking up the fires ahead of this massive game on Sunday. He's claiming, guys, that when you look back on this era of City-Liverpool rivalry, although City have won more trophies than Liverpool, Liverpool have been the more successful team because their trophies mean more to their fan base, given the financial situation at both sides. Does he have a point?
I haven't heard him say it, and reading his quotes and hearing the actual interview can be two very different things. The context can be different. But from what I've read, he's obviously trying to be a little bit cheeky, isn't he? I mean, look, City have been nothing short of sensational. You know what I think of Pep Guardiola. But there's no doubt about it. They have had more money. And I think Liverpool fans, you know, first Premier League trophy in 30 years. What Jurgen Klopp has done in that time, the fact that he's already announced that he's going, I think there's a big emotion there for Liverpool right now. Not just inside of Liverpool, the red half of Liverpool, but outside as well. But look, the bottom line is it's still ultimately all about trophies, isn't it? But there's no doubt about it. Jurgen Klopp hasn't been given the amount of money. And yet, I think pound for pound has been every bit as good as Pep.
I guess the difference, Dean, between the two teams is highlighted in many ways by Calvin Phillips. City can afford to spend 50 million quid on a player who clearly isn't fit for purpose when it comes to that top level and what Pep Guardiola wants to do. And it doesn't really get a mention, does it? Basically, they've signed a £50 million flop, and it hasn't knocked them off their stride. If Liverpool spend £50 million on a player, I think they're still in a situation whereby that player has to come in and make an impact.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, but that's not going to go away. That's there. People can have their opinion on that, of course. There's no doubt that it's not been level in terms of what the two managers can spend and who they can bring in and when. The one thing I would say is, though, I think that's unfair on plenty of the Man City fans that were there at Main Road for many, many years and didn't ask necessarily to have been bought by, you know, an ownership with the wealth that they have and should rightly enjoy, you know, the times that they're having. And I'm sure they've got plenty of new fans as well, as we've seen. But those supporters, like any other, deserve it.
Yeah, I'm sure the hardcore City fans, the 10,000 who are watching them in League One, that they do deserve it. You're absolutely right. That's a little bit churlish from me, but I understand where you're coming from. I think it's such a big game on Sunday that we need to get a prediction from you two. Who's going to win?
There's something about Anfield, isn't there? You're going to say I'm sitting on the fence and going for a draw, but if one team has to win, I actually fancy City. But I just think the Anfield crowd will probably turn it into a draw.
I've got it down for a 2-2.
No, I think Manchester City are going to win this. I think form and top players being available and in form will make the difference. I think Liverpool have been unbelievable, but have got through games recently. You don't get through a game like this if you're not right. I think it'll be 2-1 City.
Here's a question then. So you think City will win. Scott thinks if there's going to be a winner, it will be City. For the Premier League, is it better in terms of competitiveness if City don't win the title this season? Are we in danger of the Premier League becoming like Ligue 1, like the Bundesliga until this season, just dominated by one team?
Well, look, for me, for the record, I don't care who wins it. I just want the best team to win it. And if that's Manchester City year after year after year, then so be it. And what I also want is a really close one. I would rather, you know, City win it, say, 3-4 years on the spin, but we go down to the last day, then Liverpool win it by 10 points 1 year, City win it by 10 points the other year. For me, it's the season as a whole and how good that season has been and how good the finale is. City end up winning it, so be it. But look, yeah, absolutely. I think we don't want to see the same name down every single year, but We're seeing a three-horse race, and if it goes down to the last game where all three are still involved and City end up winning it, I look at that as a vintage Premier League season.
Yeah, I like to see a team that's never won it and players that have never won it, because you just see a different, you see a different reaction. It has a different feel about it. I think even if it's close, which would make it exciting, but if City win, the players don't celebrate the same way as a team that won it for the first time or won it for the first time in a while. So that's what I want. I want to see that side of it, the genuine emotion side of it, rather than it being just another trophy.
I'm just checking, Dino, if mathematically West Ham can still do it. Wouldn't that be good?
That might just, that'll definitely save Boise.
See, for me, I need Aston Villa to win it, because obviously Liverpool City is a nightmare either way. And as I've already mentioned, in a house full of Arsenal fans, they're going to be unbearable. So come on the Villa. Let's talk about Aston Villa, because there is another huge game on Sunday. It's overshadowed by what's happening at Anfield. But Aston Villa against Tottenham, this is going to be massive, isn't it, in terms of the top four. Whoever wins this game is in a brilliant position to be playing Champions League football next season.
Yeah, I think I've obviously been really impressed with Aston Villa. You know, they've had the odd, poor performance. And I'm talking odd. Their home record's incredible. And they've won the last three against Spurs. So Unai Emery's got the Spurs players marked. In terms of that high line, I think they will have chances, Tottenham, because of the way they play and that high line that Villa play. I know Diego Carlos is back training, and I know Cons have played the last game. That could be crucial to the way that high line plays, with that extra bit of pace to play against the likes of Son and Werner. But again, with Aston Villa at home, you can't see past them winning the game and extending the points gap between them and Spurs.
Scott, is this arguably a bigger game for Tottenham than it is for Aston Villa? Because you look at Ange Postecoglou this season and the plaudits he's got. He's won Wimbledon, he's won the Grand National, he's won the next general election as well. But ultimately, there's no guarantees that Tottenham get Champions League football. They're already out of both cups.
Yeah, he won the best London manager as well, didn't he? the awards. Look, I definitely think it's a bigger game for Spurs. You know, just looking ahead to the fixtures from now to the end of the season, and Spurs have got, West Ham away, Newcastle away, City, Arsenal, Liverpool. I think this is a game that Spurs have to win. You know, I've said up until now, and I've tried not to flip-flop, unlike certain people, but I've said all along that I fancy Spurs to finish fourth. But if they don't win this game, and that's not going to be an easy thing to do at Villa Park, then I just think that points will be dropped from both sides, but I think more points can be dropped from Spurs. So this is a game going into it where, yeah, Ange has to win. And with both teams looking for a high line, I can see plenty of goals. I really can. I think it's going to be a really exciting game.
And if Ollie Watkins isn't on the plane already come the summer, is this an opportunity, Dean, for him to cement himself as first reserve to Harry Kane, if you like?
Yeah, I think he's unlucky that he's got someone like Harry in front of him. And even though Harry's gone to Bayern, he's been relentless in the way that he's played and scored. So Harry is going to start again. I think Watkins, has been the top striker in the Premier League this season in terms of all-round performance. I don't think anyone's been better. I know Haaland scored more goals, but his performances, whenever I watch him live, so impressed with him. He'll definitely be there, that's for sure. And he is genuinely pushing Kane for a start.
Who wins, Villa or Spurs?
I'm going to go for Aston Villa. I just think that home record, they're too strong. Spurs, I think it'll be a great game. I can see it being plenty of goals, but Villa to come out on top.
Scott, are you on the fence again? You're calling a draw?
Well, I know, and I've said that I fancy Spurs to finish fourth, and I've just said they have to win this game. So, do you know what? I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to go for Spurs. It's going to be a hell of a win if they do go to Villa Park and get it. But I'm going to not flip flop, Crookie.
Well, that game is going to be a huge part of the Sunday session that comes live from Anfield. Myself and Hugh Wisencroft will be on Merseyside. 1 o'clock, we get underway on TalkSport on Sunday. On Saturday, our 12:30 offering is Manchester United against Everton live and exclusive to national radio. Adrian Durham after that, of course, will be going around the grounds. Our 3 o'clock kickoff on TalkSport 2 is Wolverhampton Wanderers against Fulham. And then on Monday night, we have Chelsea against Newcastle. A big game for Newcastle, who still harbour aspirations of playing European football next season. And every game is a big one for Mauricio Pochettino as well. Guys, thank you very much for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure to get out of bed after 4 hours sleep and join you guys. We'll see you all on Monday when we'll be reviewing all of the weekend action. It feels like a massive weekend as well.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.